Oh, what did you find out? Yeah, Han.
For me, it was the experience which is very important in a way. One time I've done such a thing, I was very embarrassed of one emotion of mine.
Mm.
Actually, I was in love with her, and I couldn't say it.
Mm.
And I had to leave the program.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't continue. I was stuck with it. And this time I said to myself, I will say whatever comes. And there was one embarrassed emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I won't say it. And then I found this emotion become bigger.
Mm.
So I said it. And at the moment I said it, it's just gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful to see.
Yeah. Very beautiful to see. Very beautiful to hear. Very important to see as well. So Han was saying that he had one thing that was coming up that he felt embarrassed to say. And so he said, no, that I won't say. And in deciding not to say it, he felt it taking up more and more and more space, that it seemed bigger and bigger and more complicated. Until in the end he decided, okay, I will say it. And as soon as he said it, he said, as soon as it was out there, it's gone. Dissolved. And so like I was saying earlier, about those things that feel embarrassing or shameful, they stay as monsters within us. They stay feeling embarrassing and shameful by the very retention of them. Not retention, the holding on, the keeping. And there's something very tangible often about the moment they're released, named, released, normalized in that way, they really lose their power. It's sort of very clear and beautiful and liberating example of that. Right. What was it? I said, what was it? Yeah, a meat.
The state is very liberating. I was confident it's very difficult question for me, and I don't think I'm here. And really, I know not that fast, but very fast is like, oh my god, I'm everything. I'm this and I'm this and wow. And very fluid.
How are you feeling now?
I feel like 10 hours of meditation. Like so relaxed and at peace with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. There's something about confronting the familiar sense of self that allows it to be more fluid, more open, more free, more relaxed. Just like you're saying. Good. Yeah.
Really, collection is really, 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 really,
And what was the quality that that not saying anything, that that not answering had? Peace. Peace of not having to produce and maintain and support and present a false image of what or who one truly is. Thank you. Yeah. See that? Right. So the important bit is the knowing that it doesn't serve and that it's not true. You can't make it stop happening. But when you know you're caught in it, you can know it's not true. And sometimes that means just reminding yourself that it's just that structure, it's just a self-image in that moment. Sometimes it might mean, you know, turning towards it. And the way the Buddha dealt with it was turning towards that structure which he called Mara. Mara means the beater, or the killer. Marna, in Pali to beat. And he'd say, I see you, Mara. And then, so in the Eastern tradition, you know, personifying those aspects of mind. And then it would say, and Mara, seen for who he was, sunk his shoulders and slunk away. And it kind of collapsed. And we see, it's just a structure. Just a view, it's just a kind of a historical, old, well-rehearsed view. You're like this, you're like that, you should be like this, you should be like that. I see you, Mara. Scene collapses, loses its power. And sometimes, because if we feel very oppressed or very ruled by that structure, we might need a bit more of a stronger reaction than I see you. Like, hey, get off my back. You know, something that lets us fill out into where we are and that allows us to trust our experience rather than kind of being shrunk, being controlled, being ruled, being oppressed by Mara, by the voice of self-doubt, self-measurement, self-criticism. Yeah. I was telling somebody today that at the centre where I live in France, I teach a week-long retreat every year that's just about that, just about working with that structure. And I was thinking next time I come to Israel, which won't be next year, it'll be not till the year after, but next time I'll offer that retreat here. It's a way away, but that would be my intention for coming next time. Okay. I'm not sure, is your hand? Yeah. Did you recognize it? You said, I just felt, I just knew I was more, much more than the self-image. What's that sense of more, much more? How do you recognize that experience, that knowing that you're much more? How did that knowing come about? What were you doing that gave rise to that knowing that you're more, much more than your belief about yourself or your usual sense of yourself? Right, sure. But what was your orientation? What were you doing? Where were you looking in order to notice the truth of that? That's how to. That was your question, huh? How to support that, how to feel that more, how to align with that. By paying as close attention as you can to your experience and not relying on the ideas you have about who you are or about what's happening, but being willing to just to look as closely as you can, which, just as you describe, gives rise to the knowing. Not the idea, the embodied, the knowing that you know. Something much deeper, wider, vaster, freer, realer. Realer isn't the word, it means more real than the idea we have about ourselves. The idea has to be limited, always limited, even if it's a big idea, even if it's a spiritual idea. Just an idea, it's a fixed thing, a dead thing. And who or what we are is not fixed. Well, yeah, in a way. I mean, but you know, the question, just asking yourself the question, could become mechanical, you know. So it's not really so much about whether you're asking the question or not, it's really about just orientating your attention towards embodying your experience, you know, which is at the heart of what you were doing in the inquiry, right? Asking yourself, or, you know, letting that happen through someone else asking you, who am I right now? Or sometimes it's more, or what is this right now? What is this experience? Oh, I'm eating my dinner. Okay, thank you. What is this? Oh, it's a movement, and there's a lot going on. Oh, thank you. It's not quite that we do it in that way, but that sense of that the inquiry we're doing with each other is modelling the way we can meet and explore and open up our experience. Any experience. All of our experience. Everything, every experience, every interaction, every mind moment is a gateway into deepening and opening up what's happening. And as you start, as many of you are reporting, you know, we don't need to go somewhere to find any answers. The answers are the way our experience opens up. The answers are the knowing, the unmistakable knowing that's there when we get past the idea of what's going on, the idea of who we are.
As the first question, we both realized that each one of us controverts images, self-images, like I'm smart, I'm stupid, like you said before. And then the second question, I think we both realized that it's very fluid. The self images we have are changing all the time. At the moment, it changed. As we asked one each other the question, we felt different every time.
Mm.
But there was something that I wanted to ask you, because, for example, I have self image that doesn't change. Particularly something that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
It stays all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Even some self-image.
Mm-hmm.
And do I convince myself that this is me? Or every experience I have just happens to be that the answer will be, oh, this is my self-image, or this is me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm not quite sure I completely understand some of what you're saying. But I think I get a little bit the gist.
It's like, if there's something that always repeats.
Right.
Yes, a self-image that you feel all the time. It doesn't change.
Yeah.
So, we say that it's just self-image, but the fact is, it goes along with you all your life. So
yeah.
How,
and the potency of self-image, and the seeming continuity of self-image, is because we believe it's true. Right? If we have a self-image, I'm green, we won't get very stuck with it, because I don't believe it's true. But if we have a self-image that we believe is true, that we have history that has told us is true, that we've been maybe told by others, or that we've internalized ourselves and that we keep telling ourselves, then we do believe it's true. We believe it's true so strongly that it seems to always be there. It seems to not change. It seems to not be absent. Actually, that's not true. Whatever the self-image, whatever the strongest sense of self-image is that repeats all the time, there are plenty of moments when that self-image isn't there, when there's a different self-image. But the important thing, the self-image that repeats is the one that has the most charge, or the ones that have the most charge around them, right? The ones that we believe most strongly. Why do we believe them most strongly? Because they're the ones that we've been told, probably when we were very young, or that we've internalized from what we saw about ourselves, or what we got reflected back to ourselves when we were very young. And so unpicking the kind of core self-images often involves re-examining and re-experiencing some of the ways those self-images got formed. Well, by being open to what the associations are for those self-images. Like the self-image that seems, those ones that seem the most constricting or most sort of secretly true or the most persistent, just inquiring a little bit, how did that get formed? And you can inquire into that. In meditation, you can inquire into it in a reflective way, you can inquire into it through writing, just telling yourself, what do I know about that self-image, and where does it come from? What's my history, in other words, with that self-image? So when you think of these persistent ones, does it remind you of some message you got, for example, in your early life?
But every experience I had just
made it stronger and stronger and stronger. Part of it because people told me I'm deaf, and part of it because I thought, oh, I'm deaf. I can't point out an experience that made me realize the opposite of it.
Yeah. So then you need to, I would say, to inquire into where it seems to come from. Because people will tell you you're all kinds of things. I'm sure people have told you you're all kinds of things that you don't believe. People are always telling us, oh, you're so nice. And you say, oh, thank you. But it doesn't go in. And we say, oh, they don't really see who I am. But then someone tells us, oh, you're so stupid. And they go, oh, my God, they've seen me. They totally know my inner true nature. Right? So it's not, we don't create self-image just through because somebody tells us something. It's because somehow it lines up, and usually, in fact, pretty much always, what it lines up with is some very old, very young way in which we've internalized that message. So if it doesn't seem to be about your early life, and my hunch would be that it probably is somewhere down the line, but the connection might not be clear, to inquire into where does it seem to come from, and how come you believe that one? How come you believe that one amidst all the various messages that you'll have been given? Right? We'll have all been told you're great and you're not great, you're lovely and you're not lovely. You know this, and you know all that. How come I constellate my sense of self around this version and not that version? So that's also worth inquiring into. What does it serve? You know, we did that question yesterday, what's right about getting stressed? So you might inquire in that way. What's right about constellating around this particular self-image? And in the widest view possible, nothing's right about it. It's just, it's limiting. It's claustrophobic. It's limiting your experience of who you are, which ultimately is both like limitlessly expansive and utterly dissolvable. But like you say, there's a lot of belief around what serves you, the seeming protection or the seeming security. So, you know, so a lot of your questions are pointing to further inquiries, more inquiries. And so, you know, the days here are short, few, but life is long. And, you know, I hope very much that if you find this way of working, both the kind of clarity and focus and curiosity that we're developing in the meditation practice, and the skills in inquiring into your experience, if you find those things useful, then really to make the time and the opportunity and to develop that. And you know, with other friends that you have that are involved in practice as well, you know, getting together and inquiring. I meet with friends, even if I don't live nearby, sometimes meet with friends on the phone or something to inquire in that way. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a really important distinction to notice the difference between qualities and self-image. Right? A self-image is basically false. Right? It's a false view of who we are, and therefore it's propped up through falseness. And that's what you're noticing when you notice there's a kind of arrogance, there's a need to keep trying to reinforce that. Yes, so there might be a quality of kindness. Right? Having a quality of kindness, it has a certain kind of effortlessness to it, a certain purity to it, a certain radiance to it. If we're just manifesting kindness, if we're just acting kindly, there's a kind of beauty to that. But if we have a self-image of kindness, even though the kindness may be true, if we're probably, oh, I'm a kind person, yes, I'm a kind person, you know, there's a kind of inflationary thing going on with that. And we recognise that that stinks, you know, that it's got an arrogance or a kind of a puffed up quality to it. That doesn't deny the quality. It may be very true what you're seeing, but there's something about the self-image that pollutes the quality in some way.
How do you take away this position?
By recognizing it, that it's there. By feeling the what you're speaking about, the kind of arrogance, the limitation, the squeezing, the untruthfulness of it. Okay. So, last one. Yeah.
In my apartment, when we were practicing the first question, we have to share it among the same qualities. It's interesting to see that things I haven't thought of in the past.
Yeah. We're not so unique as we like to think. Okay, so... Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. In the second question, I used automatically the inside metaphor.
Oh, metaphors.
Metaphors.
I thought that was a Hebrew word. I was metaphor. You use metaphors, yeah.
And it came to me very natural.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you talk with her about the quality, I wonder if it's not in a way the same. It cannot describe the truth. But why? As a researcher, it means a lot for me. And what for me much deeper and wider than the first question when I used some characteristics of myself. But now I'm not sure.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's when we're confronted with something mysterious, and who am I is very, very, very mysterious, right? Where am I now? Sometimes metaphor seems to be a more appropriate language to speak of the mysterious, right? So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that we find in terms of the qualities, like you were just saying, that we feel shy or reluctant to just show up as I am, you know, love manifesting itself as form. It's true, but we might feel shy to show up in that way, so we might go to the language of metaphor. So you have to see for yourself whether it's just the kind of poetic appropriateness of metaphor, or whether there's some way of not feeling uncomfortable with actually embodying the truth and beauty of that wide open experience. So let's stop there. And as some of you have explored and shared, you know, about the aliveness of your inquiry. And so even as we go back into silence, you can keep the sense of inquiry alive as you walk, as you eat. Noticing when you contract into an image of yourself, either that you're telling yourself about or describing yourself, or a self-image that you're trying to somehow present and posture, even within the silence. We're not speaking to anybody, nobody's paying any attention, but still it can be a kind of, I'm like this, that we're doing to others. Or that we're seeing our own self-image as if through the eyes of another. So noticing both when you find yourself in the world of kind of brittle, limited self-image, and also being open to the possibility of something else, something undescribable in terms of image, something more mysterious, something more, much more, that someone said, something expansive, something freer, something that isn't actually a something at all. So, please enjoy supper. Mm-hmm. Betiavon. Mm-hmm.